always cough like that because I can check the monitor good. It takes you all the way through the spike. Chapter 25, verse 1. Now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him, and desired favor against him, that he would send him for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Let them therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him. And when they had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me? Then Paul said, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as you very well knowest. For if I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof they accuse me, no man may deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, Hast thou appealed to Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go. And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came into Caesarea to salute Festus. And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause to the king, saying, There is a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. To whom I answered, Is it not the manner of Romans to deliver any man to die before that he which is accused have the accusers face to face and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him? Therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth, against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusations of such things as I supposed, but had certain questions against him of their own superstitions and of one Jesus, which he was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept until I might send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said to Festus, I would also hear the man myself tomorrow. Said he, Thou shalt hear him. And on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice with great pomp, and was entered into the place of hearing with the chief captains and principal men of the city, at Festus' commandment, Paul was brought forth. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us, you see this man of whom all the multitude of Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself has appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write on unto my Lord. Wherefore I have brought him forth before you, and especially before you, O King Agrippa, that after examination had, I might have somewhat to write. For it seemed to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him. Now we're stepping into a phase of Paul's life where he's facing accusations, and very serious accusations. But what is happening in this phase of his life is God is beginning to show us something, and this is a shadow of whose life? It's our lives. And he's beginning to show you something. No matter how bleak something looks and how bad it looks, God is still in control. So when the accusations come, you don't worry about the accusations. You only keep your mind focused upon what God has spoken to you. So you focus upon Christ, not upon the sins and all the things that everybody wants to take you to the negative sides, but you listen to what God had to say. And if God told you something, believe me, it'll come to pass. It will come to pass. Don't make any difference about anything else. Just listen to it. And whenever they accuse you, just like Jesus accused, told the devil when the accuser spoke to him and said, you know, all these things are going to happen. He said, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God, but you should live by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. If we hear what he said, that's what brings life to us. And don't change our opinion of what God said because of situations. If Paul changed his situation here and compromised in something, I think we'd have been in a serious problem, or he'd have been in a serious problem. You don't compromise what you know to be truth just because of opposition. Opposition should confirm that you're walking the right course when you're living the right life. Okay, back to the first verse. Now when Festus was come to the province, after 3 days, just 3 days, and he went, he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Do you know what Caesarea means? Severed, okay? When you're severed, and Jerusalem speaks of the double peace, or the place of God's home, to the highest realm, it only takes 3 days. Imagine that. Just 3 days. Anyway, from the place of separation to the place of double peace. And that's Passover, Pentecost, into tabernacles. Both the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul, or they slandered him. They did all these things, said bad things about him. And they begged him and desired favor against him that he would send for him to Jerusalem, setting an ambush, is what it should say, to kill him along the road. But Festus responded, Paul should be kept at Caesarea. He himself would depart shortly. He's going there. He's going to go there shortly. Just keep him there and I'll be there. Let them therefore, which said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him. So if there's any bad thing in him, then you accuse him down there. In verse 6 it goes on to say this, and when he had tarried among them for more than 10 days. Why 10 days? The law, see. How did they live? Under the law. So they were living by the law, and that's why he's saying he was going to be judged by the law of man, not by God. This is all about what man's trying to do to God's representatives. They're all trying to judge you, and that's okay. Let them do what they think they can do. And if they do judge you, it's God's desire, isn't it? And if God doesn't want you to be judged, you won't be. I stand on the words that God spoke to me years ago, that I'd die an old man of natural causes. So when I've had all kinds of accusations and threats, I can look at them and honestly say, that's a lie. And I have, with a man touching my forehead with a gun. But I'm here and he's dead. So who was lying? He was going to kill me. Didn't happen. See, I believe what God told me because it came out of left field and I wasn't even thinking about anything. he said something to me. And I've held on to those words, and I intend to hang on to them till the day he's ready to take me home. Whenever it may be, it's all right with me. Okay, where did I leave off there? 6. Not done there, 10 days. And he went down to Caesarea, rather, and the next day sitting on the judgment seat. Now this word judgment, have everybody heard the word bema? Yeah. I know the Baptist persuasion always call it the bema seat of Christ, you know, and bema is just a Greek word for judgment seat. Okay, that's all it is. And they use it for several different ways, but they use it for that, you know. And it's a seat that's, you have to ascend up steps to get to it. It's a high seat, you know. And it's a place of authority. It's for judges set to make those decisions. There's no doubt about it. I mean, in the natural, but that's not what it's really about. But so anyway, for those, they went up to the judgment seat, to the bema seat, and commanded Paul to be brought. Well, see, under the law, those things are done, aren't they? There's a man sets over you and judges you if guilty or not guilty. But I had a man one time that judged me. He was hanging on a tree on a hill outside Jerusalem. And while he was hanging there, he gave judgment upon me and upon the whole creation. And he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they're doing. And so my judgment's over. I don't worry about any judgment from anything or anyone because my Father already heard the judgment upon me. And guess what? Not guilty. I'm not guilty. And neither are you. The only way you carry guilt in you is because you choose to hang on to it. He has delivered you from that. He set us free. If He set us free, don't let anybody, including yourself, put yourself back into that penalty phase again. And when He had arrived, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many severe accusations against Paul, which they could not prove. Well, if I had all the accusations, if all the accusations were bales of hay, you couldn't stack them on my property. You know, you couldn't stack them up with it. But they can't prove anything. They just make accusations. And see, accusations should not mean anything to you because you know the truth, correct? If you know the truth about something and someone falsely accuses you, why should you be concerned? See, we get wrapped up too much in what someone else thinks about us if we're accused of something. And see, that's exactly right, we concede to the carnal mind when we start worrying about anything. If God says it's going to be all right, it's going to be all right, and don't worry about whatever it is. If they accuse you, let them accuse you. It's okay. And what's going to happen when you let someone falsely accuse you and you don't really get in a battle with them and start getting all this fear and intimidation and all this stuff jumping on you, you don't accept it, guess what? You're going to be a witness, a walking witness of the peace of God in you, the Christ in you. How else are you going to show somebody? If somebody doesn't do you wrong, how can you show grace and mercy to anybody? If everybody treats you good, why would you have to show them anything? If you don't have the opposition, there's no purpose for God putting His grace and mercy within us to give to somebody. I got to give it to somebody who does me wrong. Correct? You've got to think about these things. You've got to learn that we have to have opposition so we can show them the love of God. Because if God doesn't judge us, then what's everybody else trying to judge us for? Verse 8, while he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor against Caesar, have I offended in anything. The last two words, at all, aren't there. That's just added words by King James. Okay, verse 9, but Festus, desiring to do the Jews a favor, responded to Paul and said, do you prefer to go up to Jerusalem and there be judged concerning these things before me? Well, that's a trap. You know it. I mean, just think about it. If you can accuse me sitting here, why should I want to travel for so many days up a dirty road and all the heat in chains to be judged up there? And you're going to be the one judging me. Why don't you just judge me here? I found out a long time ago it's better to get her done right here. If you're going to judge me, judge me. Why should I do a lot of work for you to judge me later? It's going to get the same verdict. So whatever comes out, it's going to come out. They were going to kill him. That was their whole goal, just to kill him. And he knew it, so he didn't want to walk back in that trap. I mean, it'd be stupid to walk into that. And he knew it, so he didn't go. And then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as you very well know. Because if I be an offender or have practiced anything, not committed, but practiced anything worthy of death, I do not refuse to die, but if there be none of these things whereof they accuse me, no man may deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar. He's saying, hey, if I've done nothing wrong, you've got nothing against me. If you've got something wrong, do it. If I deserve it, give it to me. But I have done no wrong, and I stand right here clear. He said, we can do the same thing. This mentality in the church world that if you get beat up all the time, that's a good thing. And it's not. It's not healthy to be depressed all the time and being rejected all the time. You can stand and be a man just like Paul has here. He said, hey, I've done nothing wrong. I have nothing to be ashamed of. If you want to accuse me, go ahead, but I'm not agreeing to anything you're saying because you can't prove anything. No proof. And the one thing the law requires is what? Proof. See, under the new covenant, we don't need proof about anything. We don't judge. So why should we have to worry about proof? We don't. I don't have to prove myself innocent. I live my life. That's enough to prove it right there. If they can't see it, it's none of my concern. My Father knows where I'm sitting, doesn't He? I don't have to prove anything. Nobody on this earth do I have to prove to, except myself. And I've already done that. I know that I'm pure because of Him, not because of me. Not what this body's done or anything else. It's because of the Christ within me, nothing else. Then verse 12, Festus, when he had conferred with the council, and that's the Sanhedrin, responded, you have appealed to Caesar, to Caesar you shall go. He said, okay, that's the way you want it. That's what's going to happen. So I really think that here Festus was a little frustrated because he wanted to show favor to the Jews. He wanted to, you know. He wanted to help them out, but he couldn't because he knew the law. And after certain days, King Agrippa, and that speaks of a wild horse tamer, okay, and Bernice, which she was a Jew, remember, her name means victorious, came to Caesarea to salute Festus. And when they had been there or remained there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause to the king, saying, "There's a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders, or the high priest and the elders of the Jews, informed me, desiring to have a sentence of condemnation," is what it should say, "against him. They wanted me to judge him so he could die. To whom I responded, 'Is it not the law of the Romans to deliver a man to die before that he which is accused have the accusers face to face and have an opportunity," not license, "but an opportunity to make a defense for himself concerning the crime laid against him?" So he said, can't he face his, he has a right, the Roman law said you have a right to face your accuser and to make a defense. Well, they wasn't going to give it to him. And see, religious people, that's the amazing thing. You can see it in religion all over the world. If you do something they don't like, they want to kill you. They don't want to give you any rights. You just hear what I say and do what I say or you're my enemy and you deserve to die. And that's the way religion is. And it's in most religions, not all, most. And it's a bunch of superstitious, man-made blah. You know, I don't even have a word for that. It's so nasty. Garbage is a good word for it. Better than a lot of them, I guess I could have said. I ran into a gentleman yesterday in Chillicothe, a Baptist man. And he overheard a conversation. A man called me from Columbus and telling me how he was beginning to hear the voice of God in his life. You know, very encouraged, just so excited. And he said, I don't want to take a shot at you or anything. He said, but I'm not listening to you as much. And I said, well, great. You should never be listening to me. Listen to the Spirit of God in yourself. And he said, well, you know what I mean. I'm still listening, but I'm not doing it as much. I'm reading now and listening to hear in myself. And I said, well, Paul, that's the whole point. If the whole point is to have everyone be able to hear in themselves. It doesn't mean we don't come together to fellowship and discuss scriptures and things, but it's to be able for each individual to hear in the, within themselves God speaking to you, because he does if you pay attention. He's there talking all the time. And so I said, I'm encouraged that you're hearing things, and I hope you don't have to listen to anything anymore. I hope you hear it straight from God. You know, that's okay. And I said, I've done my job. If I've got your pump primed and you're on your own, hey, I've done my job, you know. So this other Baptist guy was listening, and while I was still talking, he said, I'm trying to get in your conversation. I said, yeah, it's okay. When I get done, we'll talk. And when I got done, we did talk. And he was telling me he was a Baptist preacher from out around Jackson, and he said he left the church, the Baptist convention, or what do they call it, something like that, you know, because they believed if someone had been married and divorced, they couldn't preach. And I said, well, that's a man's rule. He said, that's exactly why I left. But then he opened up a lot of things that I kind of stepped on his belief. He thought King James was the only trans. He said, I'm kind of King James only. And I said, well, I can show you thousands of words that's mistranslated. What are you going to do with that? I said, even in your King James, you have all these italicized words. What are those? He said, added words. I said, thank you. Then how, if it was already perfect, why do they need to add something to it? So we had fun. I had fun with it. And I gave him my card, and I said, you know, when he sees that, if he goes to the website and listens to anything, it'll either make him or break him, you know, and it's not my call. But he needs to know there's something beyond what he's doing. He got on to tithing, and I won't go there, but, you know, it was a, if you tithe, look what God will do for you. You know, you get a reward if you do this, you know. It's like bribing you to do something. Like, no. Huh? Oh, yeah. The Catholic Church still works that same theory. When you die, if you get enough money put into the box, they'll pray you out of purgatory. And if you don't get enough money, you'll stay in that purgatory and forever. You have to get money to get out of there, you know what I'm saying? That's all them. I can't believe good, honest, sincere people that have minds that function because they live through life and do all these different things, even doctors, lawyers, and judges, and all these people are supposed to be really intelligent and scientists, and all this, and yet they listen to some man babbling in Latin or something they can't understand and think that's, and when they speak, they don't speak, they sing, and think that's all about God wearing all these robes. I mean, I really can't understand why people think they have to have that stuff. Yeah, but I mean, I don't even understand that, but that's what they do anyway. Oh, makes my skin crawl. Where did I leave off? They haven't learned anything yet. Like, right? I know what you mean. Verse 17, I think, where she left off. Therefore, when they were come here, hence, without any delay, on the next day, I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth, against whom, when the accuser stood up, they brought not even one accusation of such things as I supposed, but had certain debates, not questions, but debates against him concerning their own religion. And the word should be religion, not superstition, but their own religion. And concerning one Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul alleged to be alive. They heard that, you know, in the literal. And because I was perplexed, of such manner of questions or debates, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged concerning these matters. But when Paul appealed to be reserved to the decision of Augustus, not the hearing, but the decision of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. And then Agrippa said to Festus, I desire also to hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, you shall hear him. So, you know, there's an inquisitiveness even in people who don't believe. They want to know what people are thinking. Would you agree to that? They may not even really know what it's all about, but they're interested. And I hear it all the time. Oh, that's interesting. Because it doesn't match up with what everyone else is saying. That's interesting. Usually when they say it's interesting, they really don't want it. They just want to hear it. And I call that the Epicurean and Stoic process in people's minds. They just want to hear some new thing that they can say, I've heard it, to tell someone else what I've heard, but they don't want to change. And in the book of Acts, you know, we had the Epicureans and Stoics, the ones who worshiped even the unknown God. They just wanted to hear some new thing so they could say they heard it. And on the morrow, or the next day, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice with great show, and was entered into the place of hearing with the chief captain and the principal men of the city, at Festus' commandment, Paul was brought forth. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are present with us, see ye this man, about whom all the multitude of Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here. The word also shouldn't be there. And here. Crying, and the word that shouldn't even be there, crying, he ought not live any longer. He ought not live any longer. Kill him. See, and that's the answer under the law. Kill. The law brought what? Death. And when we read the word in the letter of the word kills, the spirit of the word gives life. So when we just read this thing as a history book, when we just read this thing as only having to do with Paul and him back there, not teaching us principles in our life today, what does it bring in our life? It cries for death. The carnal mind always cries for death, for justice, see? What they call justice. Okay, verse 25. But when I learned that he had committed, not found, but learned that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and he himself had appealed to Augustus, I decided to send him. Okay? Said, I decided to send him. Of whom I have no certain thing to write to my Lord, wherefore I have brought him forth before you, and especially before you, O King Agrippa, that after examination has taken place, I have, the word might shouldn't be there, I have somewhat to write. He said, after this examination that you're going to give him, I figure now I'm going to have something to write. because he's blowing the king's horn, see? He's puffing him up a little bit. Because it seems to me, irrational is the word, not unreasonable, but irrational to send a prisoner and not also indicate the crimes laid against him. Why would you send somebody to jail and send them to someone to be judged and you have no crime against them? It's what the people perceive and what they're being told, but when you look into the matter, there's nothing there. And see, that's what the church world will do. They will judge you the same way. And now, really, who is judging Paul? Is the king judging Paul? Was Festus or Agrippa, either one judging? Felix, Augustus, Agrippa, any of them? Nobody. They couldn't find anything wrong. But the church world would not let go, would they? And see, the church world is always wanting to shut up anything that's in opposition. And I guarantee you, it had to do with finances. Because when the people start hearing about the love of God, the grace and mercy of God, and the law has been fulfilled in Christ, there's no more law, do you know what that did to those Pharisees that counted the money? Well, what are we going to do with no money? Well, hey, maybe go get a job. If you're just working a job, go get you a job, you know. If it's not your life, you shouldn't be into it, should you?
Well, I mean, Paul was telling them one thing that disrupted what they had stood on.
Sure. And it took them out of the limelight. It took them out of the limelight. They weren't getting all the notoriety, right? Because now they're saying, hey, Jesus was the answer. It's not about you, not in the big robes you're wearing. You know, that high priest, I mean, that was a place of honor. Everybody wanted that. But there's only one high priest now. And they didn't like that idea because they had to take their robes off. If they truly were serving God, they'd have to take their robes off, wouldn't they? It's not going to happen to them. See, they'll die holding on to their positions as what the world has given them. It's all man-made traditions. And it's the same thing about the church. When I talked to this gentleman yesterday, I told him, I said, you know, I can't find God in any churches. He looked at me real funny, and I said, because God is not in a building. I said, God's not even in this body. God is in spirit. He's inside of me and he's inside of you. So I don't go to a building or an organization to find God. I have to find God within. That's the purpose of God's life, putting our life here, to find our life within ourselves, to be mature adults, the mature sons. And I said, that's all any parent wants is their children to grow up and be adults, be productive in society. And I said, Father is no different from the world in that manner. He said, the natural teaches you about the spiritual, and now he wants us to grow up. That's all. Like what Paul said in Corinthians, he said, when I was a child, I spoke as a child, I acted as a child, but when I became a man, I put away these childish things. We've got to grow up sometime. It's okay to have them for a season. That's part of our growing up. Just like when we're kids, we all have to have little things to play with, and that's okay to occupy our time, keep us occupied. But when we grow up, we need to lay away them childish things. We need to take a hold of life as God has meant it to be and grow as he's meant us to grow. Okay? Any questions?